Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Welcome into another episode of Tailgate Talk SEC. I am Will Thomas. Week 3 recap. This was a hell of a week. This was an awesome week. Two absolutely classic games and a bunch of other ones that were entertaining to watch and told us a lot. So let's get straight into it. Got a busy night. Let's run through these. I'll just start off with the games that no one really cared about. And I'll start off with one that is probably actually matters. UTEP at Texas. It's time for the conversation. It's time for the Arch Manning conversation. 27-10 was the final for Texas. Arch was 11 of 25 passing, 114 yards with a touchdown and threw a pick. 27 points against UTEP at home. I don't know what the line was. I'd imagine it was more than 27, and that's all that Texas was able to score. I was worried about Arch coming into week one at Ohio State. I thought that was going to be the game where he struggles. But he was talented enough where he's able to come home, get three home games against cupcake teams, and really get ready to go for the SEC. That has just not happened. He's looked bad. He's looked so bad at home against these cupcakes, and it's time for the conversation. He's either just not what he's meant to be, and the last name is what's got him this far, or he's hurt. I think there's a chance that he's banged up because of the videos that we saw of him throwing, or he's just not ready yet. And I think all three of those are legitimate options. I would say that the least likely one is that he's not a good quarterback, because talent is talent. You know, the name got him places. The name didn't get him everywhere. I believe he's absolutely still a talented quarterback who can be good in this league. But man, I think he's too young, and I think he's hurt. And at that point, you really have to make the coaching decision to what is the best option for him and for the team. We'll see what Texas does. I mean, their defense looked pretty good. They forced two picks, only allowing 10 points is good. 50 yards on the ground for UTEP, 2.2 yards per carry. It was good. But, I mean, Arch, 4.6 yards per pass. Like, it's just a problem. The offense looked bad. And hope maybe that gets fixed. If not, in 2 weeks when Texas goes to Florida, the over-under for that game is going to be 6.5. But we'll see what happens. Eastern Michigan at Kentucky. Kentucky went to Cutter Bowley at quarterback, and it looked a lot better. 12 of 21 for 240 yards and two scores. It was much better for the Wildcats. They scored 48 points in this game, 140 at 23. Seth McGowan ran for 104 yards, three touchdowns. Noah Kim, the quarterback for Eastern Michigan, he had a pretty good day. He was 25 of 42 passing for 330, a touchdown and an interception. That's a little more quarterback production than you would like to see when you're hosting Eastern Michigan as an SEC team. 23 points given up at home is just okay. I do like a lot, though, that Kentucky ran the ball for 5.5 a carry and 11.4 yards per pass. Cutter Bowley seems like the much better option for Kentucky at quarterback, so it's good that they found that. I'm still low on Kentucky overall as we go into conference play, but nice win for them. Alcorn State at Mississippi State, 63-0. 63-0. This was not even remotely a letdown after the ASU win last week. Blake Chapin got in and out, only threw 14 passes, but still had 173 yards and two picks. Fluff Bothrell had 93 yards and two scores on the ground. As a team, they ran for 282 yards, 7.8 yards per rush. They forced three turnovers, allowed 87 yards in the air, 68 on the ground, did exactly what they were supposed to do. Someone who didn't, South Alabama at Auburn. Auburn won 31-15. I really wasn't that impressed. I think that is in part due to the look-ahead spot of them going to Oklahoma next week, who looks like a playoff team. Jackson Arnold was 13 of 24, passing for 142 yards, had a score. Jeremiah Cobb had a good day running the ball, 19 carries, 119 yards, and a touchdown. And their defense held South Alabama to 3.3 yards per rush. It was just okay. I mean, only winning this game by two scores is not necessarily what you wanted. I'm not going to overreact because we've seen them handle business already. Like, that road win at Baylor is a very good win. I think it was just a look-ahead spot and not like an overreaction to, oh, Auburn sucks. I think it was just a look-ahead spot. Louisiana at Missouri. 52-10 Missouri did what they were supposed to do. This offense is so, so good. Ahmad Hardy, Missouri's running back, 22 carries for 250 yards and three scores. Marquise Davis carried the ball 20 times. He also broke 100. He had 113 yards and a score. Bo Prabula was 15 of 22 passing for 174 yards and two more scores. I mean, just total dominance from Missouri on the ground. I was so excited about this running game coming into the season. That looks correct. But the fact that they also have a passing game that I did not see coming to complement it makes them really, really dangerous. And I'm really excited to keep watching Missouri this year. Oklahoma at Temple. I thought Oklahoma was in a classic sandwich spot after beating Michigan with Auburn coming in next week. Then they won 42-3. They won 42-3. John Mateer was 20 of 34 passing, threw for 282 and a touchdown, had a pick also. But Torrey Blaylock ran for 102 scores. Isaiah Sategna III, 7 catches for 97 yards, a big game for him. They won the first down battle 29-7, did Oklahoma. They won the total yards battle 515-104. It was total dominance. They avoided a look ahead and a letdown spot. Now they get to go home and play Jackson Arnold in Norman. That game next week is going to be awesome. Wisconsin at Alabama. One of my best bets was Bama, minus 20.5. They looked great. 38-14 win for the Tide. Ty Simpson looks really, really good now. 24 of 29 for 382 yards and 4 touchdowns. Didn't really have that much of a ground attack as a team, but they did not need one. Ryan Williams was officially back. 5 catches for 165 yards and 2 scores. They won the total yards contest 454-209. Won the turnover battle 2-0. Had 12.7 yards per pass. Wisconsin just had 6.9. Bama looks really, really good. Ty Simpson looks really, really good. That passing offense is a lot more dynamic. That means to me, Florida State is an awesome team. It means Florida State is really, really good. I know I said really, really good 95 times, but that's just the best way that I can put it. But Bama is not dead at all. Bama is not dead at all, especially in an SEC that is as wide open as it is this year. Arkansas at Ole Miss. Arkansas +7, another best bet, hit 41-35. We were pushing it, but this game was total fireworks. Trinidad Chambliss, the quarterback for Ole Miss, because Simmons was banged up, looked awesome. 21 of 29 for 353 and a score. He also led the team with 62 rushing yards and got in on the ground twice. Taylen Green threw for 305 yards, ran for 115. Mike Washington Jr. scored twice, 55 combined first downs between both teams. 1,001 yards combined for both teams. The only sort of slow stat is that Ole Miss only had 3 yards per carry, but they really offset that by throwing for 11.9 yards per pass. And the third down battle, unbelievably efficient for both teams. Arkansas was 9 of 12, Ole Miss was 8 for 12. This game could not have been more fun to watch. It really could not have been more fun to watch. I'm glad that I know that it was going to be close. And Chambliss looks really, really good. So I think there's definitely a conversation to be had there also about how much do you keep putting Austin Simmons out there, where really it seems like all you could do is kind of damage his confidence, when you could just kind of save him, let Chambliss go because he looks very good, very talented, very proficient, and just let that keep going. Okay, we're getting on to the big games now. This first one, I need water before we get into this. The game in Baton Rouge last night was disgusting. LSU beat Florida 20-10. I had Florida +7.5 as a best bet. Did not pan out, but you don't win many bets when the quarterback, the team that you bet on, throws 5 interceptions. Looking at the team stats for this game, Florida won the first down battle 23-10. They had a better third down conversion rate. They had more total yards. They had less penalty yards, and they had almost 38 minutes of possession. Every stat in the box score, it seems like Florida won. And what's funny is that this is the total inverse of last year, where LSU kind of had that same sort of dominance and Florida beat them by double digits. Florida, man, scoring 10 points with 5.9 yards per pass, 2.9 yards per rush, and every pick for Lagway was just, it was terrible, not just because it was a pick, but none of these were like tipped at the line and caught. None of these were ricochets that were picked off. These were all just horrible reads into either double and triple coverage or him missing spots by a lot, to the point now where DJ Lagway is a problem. He is a serious problem that is limiting the Florida offense. It's conditioning. It's bad decisions. It's a lack of experience. And he looks like a guy who needed to get shoulder surgery this summer and didn't get it, because that's exactly what he is. There's not a lot of zip on these throws. They're lofting around, which helps LSU to pick him off 5 different times. I mean, something drastic has got to change for Florida, whatever that is. And sure, you watch Lagway. Like, some of the balls he threw last night, especially to Aiden Mizell, they were perfect because he has unbelievable arm talent. But something is wrong, because you don't throw 5 picks unless something is horribly, horribly wrong, either physically or mentally. And it's a disaster, because Lagway gave LSU 10 points, right, with the pick 6 and then the pick before half that gave LSU a field goal. If you go into that game before before it happens, and you tell Billy Napier, your defense is going to hold LSU to 10 points in Death Valley at night. He would take that 107 times out of 100. That is unbelievable by Florida's defense. It was so impressive what they did. And they lost the game by two scores because the offense that is being run by Napier is so ineffective to the point where it's giving the other team points. Florida doubled up giving LSU points than what LSU's offense got themselves. It's horrible. Something drastic needs to change. Jaden Ball only got 10 carries and they threw it to him seven times. You're trying to fix something that isn't broke. Sure, getting him involved in the passing game makes sense, but just hand him the ball. You don't need to get all intricate throwing him the ball out wide when you know that you can just work between the tackles and get ball yards. Hayden Hansen caught seven passes. That is too many passes for Hayden Hansen to catch in this offense, given how much talent there is at receiver and how much talent there is at running back. That's my Florida stuff. LSU, I'm not impressed with LSU at all because I don't know what's wrong with them. The Clemson win now looks not impressive at all because Clemson is now 1-2. They just lost to Georgia Tech, and LSU struggled with them. They struggled last week versus Louisiana Tech, and they let Florida hang in on the road despite five interceptions. Florida was in that game till the end. They were, because at any point, if they're able to score one of those touchdowns, it's a one-score game. But Lagway kept throwing the ball away. They lost by 10. But that game was absolutely close. And we saw that by the box score before winning all those key metrics. Nuss was 15 of 27 passing. LSU ran the ball 25 times as a team for 96 yards. They were 4 of 14 on third downs. Really, when you look at the numbers, it was a bad game of football. It didn't necessarily feel that way watching it because it was an entertaining game to watch what those two teams play. But it was a bad game of football. And I came away really disappointed in both teams. Obviously, my pick, if one's going to turn it around, it's going to be LSU. I think Florida's dead. But both teams left a lot to be desired last night. I don't know where Florida goes. LSU, we just need to wait for that offense to click. That's all it is. Okay, Vanderbilt at South Carolina. This one was not as fun to watch because Vanderbilt is now officially dominating teams. They're dominating them. I had the over in this game. Didn't quite hit. We were short about 10 points. No Sellers kind of hurt that for South Carolina, but they weren't really moving the ball with him, though, so I'm not going to sit here and cry about him getting hurt and costing my over. Vandy's defense played really, really good. They won the turnover margin 4-1. South Carolina had more than double the penalty yardage. Sellers going out, like I just said, did hurt the offense, but did not lose them the game because they still outgained Vanderbilt. They still had more yards per pass than Vanderbilt. They just couldn't run the ball. And Luke Doty, when he did come in for Carolina, he had a pick and a fumble. But, I mean, the turnovers, you're going to lose every game, just about, if you go 4-1 on the turnover margin. And Vanderbilt capitalized. Pavia threw for 177 yards and two touchdowns. He did have a pick of his own. It was a very spread-out passing attack, and they ran the ball good enough. And I did think pregame going in that Vanderbilt was going to be able to contain Lenore Sellers. And they really did for the time that he was in. And then when Luke Doty came in, they obviously dominated that unit with him at the helm. They had eight tackles for loss. And looking at Vandy's schedule, I believe it's Georgia State and Utah State the next 2 weeks. Vanderbilt is going to be 5-0 going to Tuscaloosa. Vanderbilt is going to be 5-0 going to Tuscaloosa. And they're ranked this week. I believe there were 20 in the AP poll that came out today. Vanderbilt is a real thing. They're such a real thing. And it's very fun to watch. Because 31-7 on the road in conference, Clarkley's got it done. He's got it going over there. All right, and then last two. Two classics that I'm not sure we get games better than these all year. Let me have one more sip of water before I get into this. Thank you. Georgia at Tennessee, 44-41 in overtime. Bulldogs escape with a win. We could not have asked for a better game. 998 yards of offense combined, 51 first downs, 675 passing yards between both quarterbacks. That is not how I don't really anybody read this game going in, having this much offense. Gunnar Stockton shut a lot of people up. He played awesome. He was not just a game manager. He was very explosive. 23 of 31 for 304 yards and two scores. He ran for a touchdown as well. 9.5 yards per pass for Stockton. It was very explosive. They had 198 rushing yards on the ground as a team, did Georgia. And Josh McCray, he was not the focus back. That was Nate Frazier. But McCray had seven carries for only 17 yards, got in the end zone twice, which included the game winner. Colby Young, Zachariah Branch, and London Humphreys, they all look really, really good at receiver out wide for a great trio for Stockton to throw to. I told you guys, Georgia's offense is not as bad as it looked against Austin Peay. They were conserving things. There was a weather delay. It was fine. This offense is good. this Georgia offense is really, really good. And defensively, they were able to force two picks off of Joey Aguilar. Now, people are going to get mad that I say this. Aguilar is exactly what I thought he was going to be in this game. He played good. 24 of 36 for 371 and four touchdowns, but also two picks. That's what you're getting with Joey Aguilar. You're getting a guy who will put up good numbers. He will be explosive. He will throw for 300+. He will throw multiple touchdowns. He will also give the ball away and miss some easy throws. We saw in the second half, he started missing some routine, like hitch routes, some crossers, once Georgia adjusted. That's who he is. And that's who Tennessee is going to have to live with. He is going to hit on home runs. He is also going to make mistakes. And in a game like this, two picks, it really kind of turns the game. It really turns the game. And they had an okay rushing attack, did Tennessee, 125 yards total on the ground. Nobody really popped off. But it was mainly because Chris Brazel took every single yard just about that Tennessee gained. Six catches for 177 and three scores. He was downfield all day. Braylon Staley caught nine more passes for 97 yards and another score. Penalties. This was a big difference. Georgia only got flagged five times for 39 yards. Tennessee was flagged 10 times for 82. Having that kind of disparity in penalties is always bad, but when you do it at home, it really takes steam away from the crowd, and it can kind of work to neutralize the advantage that you have being at home field. On the road, obviously, that is horrible. You can't do that. At home, it's the same. It's kind of a similar story, right? Where you lose steam, you lose momentum, you let the road team get more comfortable, get into favorable situations. And we saw that happen. And we saw Georgia be able to come back from down 14 in the first quarter and be able to pull off the win. I was really impressed with both of these teams, though. This is the polar opposite of Florida LSU. I always thought Georgia was a playoff team. I did not think Tennessee was a playoff team. I'm now at a point where I would not be shocked if they're able to make it. They'd have to go 10-2. I think, I'm not sure their schedule really has enough juice to be a 9-3 playoff team. So I think they also go to Alabama. That, I believe, is one of their hardest games. They have to go to Gainesville where they really don't win, but Florida's going to be, who knows what Florida's going to look like in November at this point. So I think both teams could easily be a playoff team. That was an awesome game to watch. And so was this next one, Texas A&M at Notre Dame. One of my best bets was the over 49.5 in this game. I believe that was hit in the first half. Final was 41-40. A&M, just an awesome rematch from last season. The teams were so, so even. The differences in the team stats was crazy. There was only a disparity of one first down, 59 total yards, 0.5 yards per pass and yards per rush, both in favor of A&M, and it was an even turnover battle. What's interesting, I just talked about how the penalties really hurt Tennessee. A&M lost the flag battle in this game a lot. 13 flags for 86 yards compared to 5 for Notre Dame and 31 yards. They had more than double the penalties and double the yardage, and they still overcame it and won on the road. Another crazy thing about this game, Marcel Reed had a 46% completion rate and threw for 360 yards and two touchdowns. None of those stats make any sense. But that's why the sport's incredible. Le'Veon Moss was their only real running threat. He carried the ball 20 times for 81 yards. Not a great average, but he did score three times. And Mario Craver, how are we doing, young man? Seven catches, 207 yards, and a score, super explosive. Their defense forced eight tackles for loss. CJ Carr, he had a good showing. I thought he played fine. 20 of 32 passing for 293, a touchdown and a pick. Much more Jeremiah Love. He had 23 carries for 94 yards, a rushing touchdown, as well as that receiving touchdown where he had a one-handed grab. Jadarian Price scored twice, rhyme of the day. And Eli Raridan for Notre Dame, their tight end, he led the receiving efforts again. It might just be how they operate. I don't love it. Now, this feels weird to say, given that they just scored 40 points. It was a good showing. They did have a defensive touchdown, but regardless. You have explosive playmakers out wide, like Jaden Greathouse, Jordan Faison, Malachi Fields, plus your running backs. It feels like going to a tight end, even though Raridan's a good player, it seems like you're sacrificing explosive and pop that you don't have to do. So I do still want to see Notre Dame go to their receivers more often. And their defensive front had zero sacks, only two tackles for loss. They were totally outdone by A&M's front. And this was an awesome game. A&M deserved to win. They earned it. Notre Dame gave it to them, though. The muff PAT with 3 minutes left just cannot happen. Your defense goes out there with 3 minutes left. You know exactly what to do. In 30 seconds, A&M is on the plus 37. And then you get to a 3rd and 8 at the 23 with a minute left. You let Marcel Reed scramble for 9 yards to get it. Out on a 2nd and 6 with 54 seconds left. Back-to-back false starts by A&M. an incompletion. You get to 3rd and 16, defensive holding. Just undisciplined play there. You still get to a 4th and 11 after that, just to give up Nate Borkircher's, only catch of the night in the end zone, his second reception of the year. Tons of credit to A&M and Mike Elko for winning that game. It was gritty. It was clutch. It was tough. But Notre Dame let that one get away, and now they're 0-2. They lost their margin for error. They lost it. A 10-2 Notre Dame, despite their schedule, and despite what a lot of people would like to believe, 10-2 Notre Dame is getting in the playoff. They just are. 9-3 Notre Dame, if they also lose to USC, just for example, they might not. So Notre Dame's margin for error is now totally gone. But it was just such a tough start for Notre Dame because I thought they played really well in both of those games against Miami and A&M. I thought they played very, very good. They've just played against great teams who have then been able to take advantage and beat them. So Notre Dame, I think they're good enough to go 10-2. I think they can make the playoff, but you never know what can happen in this sport. So Notre Dame's margin for error is really, it's totally out the window. And for A&M, this was a massive win to kind of try and propel them forward to maybe finally getting over that 8-4 hump. Can A&M make the playoff this year in Mike Elko's second season? Can they make some noise? Can they make another run in Atlanta like they did last year? Oh, man, awesome with college football. Just a fantastic week of college football. Week 4, right around the corner. We will be previewing that all week on the socials. I have been Will Thomas. You can find me at W Thomas Sports on Twitter. Tailgate Talk SEC, just about everywhere. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to this episode, and I will see you next time.